Welcome to the Essential Knowledge Update podcast from the Royal College of General Practitioners. My name is Dr. Sally Higginbottom, and today I'm interviewing Dr. Anne Connolly, a GP working in Bradford with a special interest in gynaecology. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning.
So we've got some new guidance specifically around endometriosis. What's the new guidance? Where's it come from?
Thank you for asking me to talk about endometriosis, which is such an important subject for us. And the new guidance was published at the end of 2017 by NICE. And this is the first time they've published a guidance on this subject.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. What is endometriosis?
Endometriosis is a very common condition, and basically it's growth of endometrial tissue outside of the uterus. It's hormone mediated, and it's mainly a condition of reproductive years, although some of the long-term sequelae of the condition can cause long-term chronic problems such as pelvic pain. The condition causes cyclical symptoms initially, as the endometrial tissue responds to fluctuating hormonal changes that we normally see in a menstrual cycle, and therefore these ectopic patches of endometrium will bleed just like the endometrium inside the uterus will bleed. Now, therefore, it causes local irritation and pain wherever that bleeding site is.
So I think this is one of the things we sometimes miss, in that the bleeding site isn't necessarily gynecological, is it? So people can have pain and bleeding that sounds more gastrointestinal, for example.
Absolutely. And it's really the important point to think about is the cyclical nature of the problem. And so often one of the tools you can use is a menstrual related diary, so that people can put a pattern of whatever it is their symptom is, because it might be, as you rightly say there, it might be urinary symptoms with hematuria or dysuria happening during the period, or it might be cyclical bowel symptoms, or you may even have problems such as little patches of endometriosis in a cesarean scar. So it's a very vague presentation, but to start with, it is a cyclical pattern.
Okay, and it's common, isn't it? We see a lot of endometriosis. What sort of figures do we quote?
Well, it's much more common than we think. There are all sorts of estimates, but possibly up to 5 to 10% of women of reproductive age may have some symptoms. But it's much higher in women presenting with fertility problems, where estimates may be 25 to 40% of that group of women.
So we should be on the lookout for it. And typically, I think people complain that there's a long delay in diagnosis. What's that about?
The complaints are that it may take up on average to 7.5 years to make a diagnosis. I think that's very complex, because if you really want to make the diagnosis, then it has to be done via laparoscopy. And it's clear we're not going to be laparoscoping this number of women for all sorts of reasons. So sometimes it's about women not understanding what the diagnosis is, because we haven't really given it to them in the right way. But there is clearly a need to do better with early diagnosis and management to prevent some of the long-term consequences of pelvic pain and subfertility that many women will get.
Sure. So when we're in primary care, a woman comes in with cyclical pain or bleeding from a variety of sort of pelvic organs, what do we look out for and what should we do?
Firstly, it's obviously about listening to the woman, and not only listening to the physical problems that she's got, but there is a big psychological and social impact of this problem. Young girls having to take time off school, women having to take time off work or out of college and out of studies, it does need the holistic care that we are so good at in primary care. Using a symptom diary, as I say, is very good. And Endometriosis UK have an excellent website, which has got a lot of information both for healthcare professionals and for patients on, but they do have a good symptom diary. Increasingly, younger women are using phone apps to record symptoms. I think that's the first thing. We are advised to examine women, and I do think that's important that we need to do that, because a differential diagnosis may be pelvic pain from pelvic infection. So obviously we do need to be thinking of other things, but for endometriosis, certainly in the early stages, examination findings are often very normal. And it's only later on, when women have got chronic pelvic scarring and fixed pelvis or a big endometriotic ovarian cyst, that we will find things. So really one of the messages is, yes, we must examine, yes, we must think of other conditions, but don't be put off making the diagnosis of endometriosis if examination findings are normal.
And the same applies to scans, doesn't it? One of my early manoeuvres in this situation is to check a pelvic ultrasound scan, but that will often be normal in endometriosis as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. And we should always recommend somebody has a transvaginal scan. The point about transvaginal scan is you get a much clearer picture of the pelvic organs. Obviously, in some youngsters, that's not, or some women, that's not going to be appropriate, in which case a transabdominal scan is second best. But as you rightly say, often the findings are normal. And again, we mustn't not make the diagnosis just because we can't find anything. What NICE clearly tell us is that we shouldn't use a CA125. This is a blood test which is often used and gives very confusing results. And we must remember that a CA125 is really, it's a vague test. It's an inflammatory marker. And so you might get a slightly elevated result, which doesn't really mean anything. So NICE say, first line, we mustn't use CA125s and we shouldn't use MRI.
So we examine, we do an ultrasound scan, and then we initiate treatment. Is that what you're doing in your practice?
Absolutely. And the earlier we can start treatment, the better. And really the main thing, if we can, is to stop ovulatory bleeding. Because if we can do that, then we can reduce the amount of longer term damage a woman will get from her endometriosis, as well as obviously improving the symptoms in the short term.
So to prevent ovulation, we can use a COCP. Any of them will do the job, presumably.
Absolutely. So when you first see a woman, you know, obviously we need to explain the situation to her. But then one of the decisions about management needs to be based on her future or her immediate fertility plans. The best treatments for endometriosis are to stop her bleeding and stop her ovulating ideally. And that is really by using a contraceptive method. And virtually all the contraceptive methods will have some benefit on this. But if she is wanting to get pregnant soon, or she's not sure if she wants to use a contraceptive, then getting in some early treatment with analgesia such as an NSAID or other analgesia, or in the longer term, thinking about a neuromodulator, are the recommendations.
So any contraceptive, in practice, COCP and Mirena I find are particularly effective. Is that your experience?
Absolutely. If you look on the NICE guidance, the Mirena is the one that evaluates best, both for efficacy and acceptance. That isn't ideal for everybody, but if you could, that is the best of all the options. And the evidence is there in the NICE guidance for you to see. In the shorter term, often using combined hormonal contraception, it doesn't matter if it's the pill, a patch or the ring, any of those methods will also help. But you do need to do the evaluation to make sure she doesn't have risks that she can't use that. And ideally using an extended regime. So that means not having the 7-day break. So just using pill packet or patch packet, you know, without the break, so no bleed preparations, will often work best. But the desogestrel pill, Cerazette, Sorel, one of those, will also be beneficial. And Depo-Provera is also a good method at controlling bleeding and pain.
So there's a few options, and you can find something that suits most women. And you mentioned NSAIDs. Now, traditionally, we used mefenamic acid specifically for this sort of pain. Is there any evidence that's any better than ibuprofen or naproxen?
There's no evidence at all. It was just a very clever marketing ploy when the producers first came out with the trade product. I would use naproxen or certainly ibuprofen. The trick with an NSAID is to get in a decent dose early. So as the symptoms start, it's also the same with heavy menstrual bleeding. It's better to start it right before the heavier bleeding or painful period starts rather than get into their first couple of days and then taking it. And then it works better. And any of them are fine.
Great. Who do we refer?
Well, most women we can treat and manage in primary care, certainly in the earlier time. What NICE tell us, and I think this is correct, I think some women just need a diagnosis, and by choice they do need to have the option of being referred to see somebody and consider whether they have a laparoscopy. But laparoscopy is quite a tricky procedure in women who have endometriosis. So by choice is the first. Second is if they have really severe symptoms, or if the symptoms aren't responding to the treatment, or the treatments aren't tolerated, or there is absolutely nothing that can be used because of contraindications. But generally, it's better to start something and see how we get on. The recommendation from NICE is that if there's the really severe symptoms, or if you have a specialist endometriosis centre locally, and you can find that information from the British Society of Gynae Endoscopy website, the BSGE website, because we should be referring women with severe endometriosis to specialist sites.
One of the things I always struggle with is what to do with the woman that's trying to conceive but has horrible painful periods which may or may not be related to endometriosis, because essentially all of my most effective treatments are contraceptive. So other than NSAIDs, is there anything else we should be considering?
Now, I think the usual combination of painkillers, NSAIDs and paracetamol-based analgesia, amitriptyline, gabapentin for some of the more chronic stuff. But because we know of this significant link between endometriosis and infertility, it is one of the times we should be referring into fertility or into gynae services earlier if women do want to conceive and we're really struggling with pain control.
Okay, so early referral. Presumably there might be surgical interventions for some of these women.
Yes, so some of the surgery will be diagnostic, but there's good evidence that shows that some women with serious significant pain from endometriosis, actually when you look with a laparoscope, they have very few endometriotic patches, whereas other women who have lots of patches found at laparoscopy will have few symptoms. When the surgery for fertility, it will often be about destroying endometriotic lesions by diathermy. But of course, it's tricky surgery because there's lots of little lesions stuck on very delicate parts of us, like bowel, and it's high risk for bowel perforation and other injury. And dividing adhesions is also something that is helpful for fertility management by laparoscopic surgery.
Was there anything new for you in this guidance, or anything that you think will impact on your practice?
I think the most important factors are that it's very common. And I think we do need to have a lower threshold for thinking about it. I think the figures about the effect on fertility are higher than I anticipated. And this need to treat early to try and prevent this damage is so important. There are some very useful resources out there. Using a diary and referring women to websites for support or patient groups, because there is a big psychological and social impact of the problem. And Endometriosis UK is a fantastic website for that.
That's great. And I understand you with the RCGP are currently developing a toolkit on menstrual wellbeing with Endometriosis UK and the Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynaecology, which is shortly to be released. Is that right?
Yes, so alongside the other clinical spotlight and clinical priority programmes, we will be launching very soon a toolkit, which we will be building up with more and more resources about menstrual health and wellbeing.
That's excellent. Thank you very much for your time, Anne, and thank you for listening to this Essential Knowledge Update podcast from the RCGP.
Thank you.